Hello and welcome to Everyone Loves a Short Show. I mean, will you still love it tomorrow? I'm Dave.
And I'm Annie. Each month we take it in turns to nominate something we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So this month, Dave's choice was the 2003 TV show Dead Like Me. Why did you pick it?
This is always a good question, and if you pick something a while back, sometimes you're like, I can't even remember. But in this case, I do remember really enjoying the show. I do remember it being very quirky and unusual and funny. And I thought it would be, I thought it would be good to revisit it and see if that was still true.
And I kind of need to know before I start in whether it was still true.
That turns out to be a very complicated question.
Okay.
So we
it's
only...
probably for the best.
We only watched two episodes and they were of wildly different lengths. The pilot episode was nearly an hour and a half and the second episode was only about 35 minutes.
Yeah.
So that was...
The pilot was double length and the second one was normal.
Yeah. So bits of it are quite funny, but also a lot of it is really emotionally dark and there are a lot of deeply broken people in this show.
Yes.
Yeah, I would be intrigued to know what you think of it. How would you describe the show for somebody who has no awareness of it?
So, 18-year-old George has just graduated from college, which... She went to college and she dropped out of college. That's right, sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Because she's way too young to have... Yep. Okay. Let's try again. 18-year-old George has dropped out of college and is living back with her parents, and her mum is quite keen for her to find her place in the world and start making a living. So she goes to a temping agency, gets a job, and on her lunch break of her first day, she is killed by a toilet seat from some kind of...
The Mir space station.
Oh, thank you.
Which was a real thing. The Mir space station was deorbited by the Russians and bits of it did fall on the west coast of America, but they didn't hit anybody.
Okay. And then she meets... What even is his name? Rube?
I think it's Rube, yes.
Rube.
As in Rube Goldberg machine.
Okay, you might have to explain that. Who is a Reaper, and he says that she has to be a Reaper too. And then he and his fellow Reaper clan... No, that's not the right word.
Team.
Team, thank you. Train her to be a Reaper and thus things ensue.
And Reapers do what?
Oh, good point. They go to where people are due to die and collect their souls.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
To then go on to wherever they will then go on to, mm-hmm. which isn't really explored in any detail because the Reapers don't know.
No.
And that's kind of it.
Pretty much.
And yes, we watched the pilot in the first episode, so it's possible that it settled down a bit. It's possible that it went in some interesting directions, but I will never know.
No.
And I'm very sorry... But I thought it was really bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
biggest problem, George says, "You're sending me to hell," and Rube's response is, "Don't flatter yourself, you're not that interesting." And that was basically the massive problem I had with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's surly and petulant and incredibly dull.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst that's probably very believable in the situation... And for her character, it doesn't make her an interesting protagonist of a show.
No. Well, we will get into all of this, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Would you like some facts?
Oh, shit. I did not write any facts down.
Okay. Should I do the fact do?
Yes, please.
So it's 2003. It's showrunner Brian Fuller. Now, Brian Fuller is famous for making quirky shows. The other two ones that he was well known for, quirky shows in his early career anyway, the two ones that he was famous for making around about the same time was a show called Pushing Daisies.
Which
I also haven't seen, so we can't do it for the podcast.
Because
I've never watched it. Pushing Daisies.
Also, presumably, something about dead people.
Pushing Daisies is about a guy who, if he touches somebody who has just died, can bring them back to life. But if he touches them for a second time, then they die permanently.
Oh my god, that sounds horrifying.
And then in the...
And it's a comedy?
Yes.
Yeah,
and in
this
the,
is the problem.
In the first episode, his girlfriend dies, and then he brings her back to life,
and
then
he can't
touch her again.
That sounds awful.
Mm-hmm.
And?
And Wonder Falls, which is a...
Which was recommended to me by ChatGPT sometime last year, based on me telling it other shows that I liked, and
mm-hmm.
then I watched the trailer and was like, nope.
I can't remember. Well, you've seen the trailer. Tell me about it.
There was a talking cow ornament.
Oh, okay.
It was very weird. I think I can't remember.
It's supposed to be like super quirky.
Yeah, the protagonist.
Small American hometown.
Like things,
show.
Like little objects and stuff
mm-hmm.
start talking to her.
Okay.
Or something. I don't know, but it looked terrible.
I mean, these...
Well, it looked like it would not be for me. I shouldn't say it looked terrible. It looked terrible to me.
A lot of these shows are, I wonder, is this real or is it just people having severe mental illness?
Well...
Is a
and
concern.
Yay, we're trying to be funny about it. Hmm.
So after doing these quirky shows at the start of his career, he went on to create... showrun, or at least be heavily involved with Hannibal, American Gods.
Right.
He was one of the major writers for DS9.
Okay. Bit of a range.
And Voyager, and then he was the almost entirely single-handed co-creator of Star Trek Discovery.
Ah.
So.
Right.
Yeah.
Lent into Star Trek.
He's gone into very different things. Yeah.
With some. Incredibly grim drama along
the
way.
Apparently so. So it was on the Showtime K1 network for 2 seasons, 14 episodes in the first one, 15 in the second one. Fuller actually left only 5 episodes into the first show, despite it being entirely the thing that he wanted to create because of quote-unquote creative differences.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect they wanted a more mainstream-ish show, and it probably settled down in the middle a bit somewhere.
How much of it is there?
I'll just say there's 14 episodes in the first series, 15 in the second.
And that's it?
That's it.
Okay. Did it come to any kind of conclusion? Presumably
well,
not.
I'm carrying on. So,
I'm sorry. I'm trying to express interest in this terrible, terrible show.
Oh, harsh. So it was taken over by the executive producers, John Mazius and Stephen Goldshaw. There was a long gap after the second series of 2005, and then there's a direct-to-DVD film called Dead and Like Me, Life After Death, which happens in 2009.
Oh, wow.
Major spoilers, the only real thing that happens in that is that Rube goes to the afterlife and she takes over running the team.
Okay.
So people who are in it, interestingly, are from a variety of time periods, but not in a... there's a show that I've brought up more than once on the podcast, a thing called Ghosts of Motley Hall, which is about a place which is being haunted by people, but people from very different time periods. So you've got like a Tudor ghost and a First World War ghost and a medieval ghost. And
the periods that the Reapers came from are not established in the first two episodes that I noticed.
So George was born in 1985 and dies in 2003. Rube, 1876 to 1926.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
He is...
I suppose he's then been hanging around for all that time, so he's aware of modern society.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's presumably why he does everything all on post-it notes and in notebooks and stuff, because
mm-hmm.
he probably doesn't like computers.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, because I liked that.
Yeah. So it's never officially, what's the word I'm after, displayed, but it's very heavily hinted that he was a gangster and was... shot by the police for being a gangster. He, of course, is Mandy Patinkin, who is amazing.
Phoning it in like there's nothing in his life to live for.
Sorry. He's obviously known from Princess Bride. He turns out to be San Francisco from Alien Nation. Alien Nation is such a good TV show, but because he's wearing enormous amounts of prosthetics, I never realised it was him. If you've never seen the show, listeners, you definitely should. It's really, really good. Also, many, many seasons of Chicago Hope, Criminal Minds, and also Homeland. So he's been doing huge amounts of stuff.
Yeah.
Then you've got probably my favourite character, Mason.
Right.
He's played by a guy called Callum Blue. Mason's 1939 to 1966. He dies because...
He drills a hole in his own head whilst chasing a high.
Yeah.
And you like him?
Yeah, he's great. Callum Blue's mostly known for being in The Tudors on the BBC and a bit of Smallville in the States. And then you've got Roxy, who 1960 to 1982... who we're going to explain later on that all the Reapers have to also have a day job
they don't have to. She's the only one who seems to.
Well, Roxy does.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Oh,
Roxy.
Sorry. Yes. Well, George gets one at the end of the show. Yes.
She goes back to the temping agency. It's true.
So yeah, Roxy works as a meter maid and has a quite the attitude. Then we've got Betty. 1899 to 1926, who was a minor movie star.
And died the same year as Rube.
Apparently, yes.
Maybe in a different place.
She, again, is only in for the first five episodes. She left when Brian Fuller at the same time.
Because I liked her.
Her arc is interesting because...
Across five episodes?
Well, let me rephrase that. The ending of her arc is interesting because after they've reaped a soul... A different type of wibbly celestial lights will turn up, and it's different for each person. So in some cases it will be a car, in some cases it will be a boat, and in the case of the thing we'll get to later on, it's a fairground.
Yeah.
And what happens in episode 5 is Betty says, I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm really sick of it. And then when the person that she's just reaped gets on the thing to go off, she goes... with her.
Oh, jumps on.
She just jumps on, and that causes an earthquake and various other things.
Okay.
The people are very unhappy. And the only thing I was just going to mention very briefly in terms of people is there's, in one episode only, Jewel State turns up being, I don't know, in her early 20s maybe, very, very goth.
Wow,
and
okay.
Has a,
that sounds intriguing.
And has a brief thing with Mason, which is because she discovers that he's a Reaper, and being a goth, she's like, oh, you're actually a Reaper, and it's all very...
Oh, I
see. Very goth. So.
Yes, yes.
So it was nominated, you may believe it or not, for a bunch of awards, including two Emmys. Never won anything.
Okay.
It's currently at 84%. On Rotten Tomatoes, that's the viewers' choice, and an 8.1 out of 10 on Metacritic, which is the critics' choice.
That's just me then. I mean, it's mostly the humour and the fact that George is incredibly dull.
So one of the things that I wrote down really early on is introducing a major character who is defined by not caring about anything is... bold
voiceover. Question right
mark.
At the start, I excel at not giving a shit, so why should we give a shit about you?
And
this is my question.
In the episodes that we watched, Rube is essentially forcing her to do this thing that she doesn't want to do.
Yeah.
And so we start off with a character who is deliberately boring, and then we systematically disempower her.
Yes.
By forcing her to work in a crappy temp agency
and make her more and more annoyed with her situation.
Yeah, and do this taking of souls that she really doesn't want to be involved in.
Although the dog she gets sent to do is like down in a basement of something doing the filing. I love filing.
Mm.
I spent an entire summer between years at university filing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing. I loved it.
I was talking to somebody yesterday about the entire year that I spent being forced to work in a basement. I did not enjoy that.
No, fair. The basement, not so good. But the filing, love filing.
But it leads me to ask the question about her being forced to do this thing. There's a bit where just after she's died and she's...
It's just because, so that, sorry, the Reapers all have a certain number of souls that they have to collect.
Yes.
And when they hit their quota,
yes,
the last person whose soul they take has to take over as a Reaper.
It looks like that.
Right, I think that was how it was explained. So it's just dumb luck.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
But my point was that she's stuck in the situation that she hates. She's going to have to somehow do a day job and pay rent and also go off and not kill people because they don't control who dies, but getting people's souls. And it leads me to ask the question. So hang on. So it leads me to ask the question, are they in hell? Is this actually hell?
Quite possibly.
Because it's such a thing that she really, really doesn't want to be in this situation, and it's going to go on potentially. You discover later on that there's different branches of the Reapers, and there's one of them is Plague.
And, oh, yikes.
And because Plague is almost being completely wiped out, and there's therefore not that many Plague victims to take, and you have to get a certain quota before you can move on.
They're just hanging around.
Some of the people in Plague Division have been there for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Right.
And they can't leave.
But you say that they don't control who dies. It's true that they don't decide who dies, but they are told who is going to die by something.
Which is never revealed.
But they have to go and take the soul, and if they don't take the soul, the person stays alive.
Well, the person's trapped inside their body.
But the little girl doesn't die until she takes her soul. And Rube says it's different because George actively saves the little girl.
Yeah.
So she could then stay alive and carry on living her life. But Rube says that her soul would be corrupted.
Will rot inside
and rot inside her.
Yeah.
The guy she just never goes to collect. Oh, yeah, that was incredibly traumatic. The guy she never goes to collect the soul does die.
Mm-hmm.
And then his soul is trapped, so he experiences his autopsy. And that was just horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
There was so much about the show that was incredibly grim or really horrifying. And then a lot of it was designed to be funny in really bad taste, as far as I was concerned.
See, the taste of the humour
is subjective.
I used to think it was really funny, and now I'm really conflicted.
Okay.
Because there's bits of it that were still really funny, and there's bits of it where I'm like, I'm not sure.
I didn't find any of it funny, but then I don't tend to with humour in stuff. Well, that's not true. There's lots of things that I do find funny. I'm not completely without a sense of humour, I promise. But my comedy meter is not set to the same dial as everybody else's.
So there's different groups of Reapers, and you've got Plague Division, you've got, I can't remember what it's called, but basically people who just get jobs in hospitals as like porters and stuff and just, you know, take lots of old people who've died of heart attacks and things. And what these people are is it external influence?
Yeah.
I think they're called.
So murder, accidents.
Yeah. So it's the comedy effect.
Well,
people in a lot of cases.
Yeah, like on her first day, she's like looting corpses in a random apartment, and it's meant to be funny.
There's an episode. It really depends on what kind of mental space you can find yourself in.
Sure, absolutely.
Because there's an episode where a guy is celebrating like his 80th birthday or something. And he's Irish, and he's in an Irish bar, and he's tap dancing on the bar, and there is a swordfish hanging from behind the bar, and you know, that could be really funny for some people.
Yeah.
I think I found it really funny at the time. The funniest thing, can I sidetrack for a second?
Sure.
The funniest thing that I have had ever seen that I've come closest to laughing so much I nearly passed out, I probably would find horrifically unfunny now, which is an episode of a TV show called Lex, where they've got this giant spaceship that's incredibly powerful, and it goes to a planet that's never seen aliens before. And the people from the planet send somebody up to the ship and say, "This is amazing, how does the ship work?" And the guy says, "Oh, well, if I say, travel to your moon," and then the ship travels to the moon. And he says, "Well, if I just say, I want some food," and it produces some food. And he say, "Oh, I could just say, you know, blow up your planet." And it blows up the guy's entire planet.
Oh, my God.
And at the time, this is like 30 odd years ago, at the time that was the single funniest thing I'd ever seen in my entire life.
Uh-huh.
And now, probably not.
Right.
So you have to be in a space.
Yes, absolutely. I quite often find myself in a cinema or in the theatre and everybody around me is laughing uproariously at something and I'm just sitting there going, are we watching the same thing? Mm. I don't get it.
So on the one hand, there's...
As I always say, I wish I liked things more and I wish I liked more things. Mm. It is still true.
So the other thing that I was going to say in terms of what is the show really about is it just trying to show that life is capricious and random?
Maybe.
Because we have a woman literally has a piano dropped in her in a very Looney Tunes kind of way. We have a bit where George and, is it Betty? I can't remember. One of the other characters are trying to get to, they're given a post-it note by Ruby that says a person with this name is going to die at this time, roughly in this place. And they're trying to get there because they don't have a car and they can't afford a taxi, so they're walking. And they get picked up by somebody who they work out is obviously the person who's going to have to die. Mm. And then they get out of the car, and then as soon as he gets back in the car and turns the corner, he immediately falls off the side of the road and the car explodes.
Yeah.
And again, partly I guess that's supposed to be maybe funny, but also it's just incredibly random.
True.
That I think the whole thing is just going to be any of us could go at any moment.
Yeah, and it also just seems to be, you have, as you say, she's completely disempowered because even when she tries to change something,
mm-hmm.
she's told that it's just going to turn out really terribly and she has to set it back to the way it was.
Yeah.
So she has to do the job regardless. Yeah, and she can't change anything. She can't make anything better. Yeah. She's just got to let it happen and do her very small cog in the machine role.
Yeah, it's partly, but
which makes no sense, by the way.
Mm.
That was what I didn't understand, because Rube said that they could take the person's soul before they had died.
Yeah.
And when the woman has the piano dropped on her,
mm-hmm.
Roxy, whose mm-hmm. person it is, goes and then takes the soul mm-hmm. afterwards.
Yeah.
And somebody says to George, mm-hmm. "Oh, if it was me, I would have taken it while they were still round the corner, so they didn't have to experience it as a courtesy."
Yes.
And the guy in the car, Betty takes his soul and then carries on having a whole conversation with him, mm-hmm. and then he drives his car
mm-hmm.
off the road. And George herself has her soul taken by her Reaper,
mm-hmm.
and then she carries on walking along the street, mm-hmm. sees something in the sky, mm-hmm. turns and looks at it, goes, "Oh shit," and then blows up.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work? Mm-hmm. How are they still having conversations and walking around
mm-hmm.
without their soul? If for some reason, maybe there's an episode where this happens, where they take the soul and then the person doesn't die for some reason and then they're just wandering around without their soul?
I don't remember, to be honest.
But you take my point, it didn't seem to make any sense to me.
There is an episode where Roxy, who's the parking meter attendant, gets in a great deal of trouble because she's having an argument with somebody. Not somebody who's due to die, just a random person who's got a parking infraction. And she reaches into their body and pulls their soul out.
Oh my God. And so it does happen.
And then has an argument with their soul, with the person going, "Oh my God, what on earth just happened?" And then shoves them back in again and then walks off.
Oh.
And she gets into a very, very big amount of trouble.
But then I guess we get into the question of what is a soul?
Well, yes.
Let's not.
Well, we don't know because...
Well, exactly.
We don't know anything. Just as a quick aside, do you know what this reminds me of?
Go on.
I cannot remember the name of the show.
I will try and see what I can do. Telepathy, switching on the telepathy. Go.
There is a show in which somebody is delivered a newspaper every day.
Yes. Oh, I love him.
And it has tomorrow's news.
Mm.
That was such a good show.
Yes.
But
I can't remember what it's called, but I know what
I'm the kind of person who wants to know how things work.
Yeah.
And it is never explained how tomorrow's newspaper turns up at his thing. In the same way as this is never explained where Rube gets the post-it notes.
Yeah, someone just turns up and shoves a list under his door.
Yeah.
And then he writes them all out onto post-it notes and assigns them to people.
Exactly. So you don't really need to know where it comes from or how the afterlife
no,
works.
No, but it just didn't really seem to make any sense. I mean, I'm happy to just go with the concept,
yeah,
but within that, I just didn't understand how that could work.
I was thinking while I was watching it, it'd be much harder to be a Reaper now because they do everything in cash. Because they no longer they no longer look like the same people. So George goes and has a conversation with her mother.
Oh, that was quite painful.
Because she now looks like somebody else.
Yeah.
And to do anything these days, you need ID. And I don't know how this would work. But I'd also at the same time say, you know, Reapers have obviously been around since the dawn of people.
Yeah.
So for thousands of years. And yet, when you are a new Reaper, you are just left to find somewhere to live and find somewhere to make enough money to, like, feed yourself. And there's no support network beyond your immediate team leader.
But George does somehow end up on the lease for the apartment she's in because she gets a rent due notice and goes, oh, wow, now I have to pay rent.
Yeah, I don't remember how that works.
Okay. I don't know either. And Roxy presumably has some kind of identity if she's got a job.
Yeah, don't know how it works. But just going back to what you're saying about it's all being weird how their powers work anyway, because sometimes, obviously, people can see them because they interact with waitresses and people who have got parking issues and various times. But then when they're leaning over and pulling souls out of people, people don't see them do it. They just ignore them like they're not there.
Good point.
So it's very nebulous how they actually interact with the living.
Also
so
true.
So it's a bit weird. But also, you say they can't affect things. So there's the end of the first episode, George is sent off on a train to go and reap the soul of somebody who dies in an accident, and it was always going to be a little girl. It was really obvious to me before it happened. And there's a whole thing where she has a conversation with Rube saying, you know, obviously I don't want to do this, and he says you don't get to make that decision, you just have to go and do stuff. And yet there's a bit, I think in the bank, where somebody dies there and somebody says you have to make sure that they stay in the right place in order for it to happen.
Yeah, no, Rube tells George
you
have to make sure she stays in the seat on the train.
Oh,
in the bank, they're trying she and Mason are there and she's observing and they're trying to figure out who it might be in the bank and how they might die.
Mm.
And she goes, oh, I bet it's the banana skin that's on the floor. And he says, no, that's ridiculous, don't be stupid. And she says, go and put it in the bin then. So he could do that. And you know that they can prevent the deaths,
and he
because
says,
George
no, yes.
prevents the death of the little girl.
Yeah, for a while.
Yes, until she reverses that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Just very briefly.
There does seem to be, within the system, an awful lot of issues where it could potentially go awry. Let's just say.
Just very briefly, when I say that they don't look like their old selves anymore, I always thought it was incredibly mean to the actress who plays what George now looks like in the mirror when she looks like, because they only ever describe her as being ugly.
Well, no, they don't. They describe her as not being as attractive as George was originally.
I think in later episodes.
It is
very harsh.
She looked perfectly fine.
Exactly.
Mm.
So, I mean, I have maybe one or two other things to talk about. What do you have?
I want to talk about the mother.
Yes.
But other than that, I think...
Before we talk about that, can I just, again, going back to the style of the show, I want to talk about attitudes.
Mm.
And frankly, how every single person in the show has a shitty attitude.
Okay.
So, one of the things that I've noticed, possibly not for the first time recently, both in TV shows and in real life, is whether or not people say thank you to waiters and to, you know, people who hold doors open for people and stuff. Common courtesies, as we used to call it, for those of us who are
you
very
are
old.
So old.
I am so old.
So old.
But they have a diner they go to every day where they get their assignments.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember from later on in the show how George manages to disappear.
It's a German Waffle House.
Yes. I don't know how George manages to disappear out of her job in the middle of the day to go across town and reap people. But
sure. Yes, that did seem a bit tricky.
Yeah.
Shall we say.
But they go to this place and no one says thank you to the server.
Mm.
Once you've been a Reaper for any kind of length of time, and obviously a lot of these people have been doing it for like 50 years, you just lose any kind of empathy whatsoever for the people that you are reaping.
Well, you'd kind of have to, I think.
And it's interesting. The writing choice is interesting because the people who've been doing it for a long time don't have any empathy anymore because, as you say, you can't do the job and still have empathy for the dying people. So they're quite often mean to the people who've died.
Yeah.
And, you know...
This is also a problem I had. None of them were particularly likeable.
So you've got... Most of the characters aren't empathic because you have to lose that in order to be able to do the role.
Yeah.
And then the only other person is George, who says she doesn't want to do these things, but she's designed as a character that has very low empathy anyway.
Yes, absolutely. Because, I did wonder if she was going to go on some tremendous redemptive arc in a way, but even if she, you know, because she kind of does have the whole thing of, oh, I don't want this little girl to die,
mm-hmm.
which I guess she would, but then she's just going to get beaten down to it goes badly wrong if you try and avoid it or get in the way of it, so mm-hmm. you just have to do.
So
and switch your feelings off.
It turns you into a psychopath.
Yeah.
Essentially.
So, you know, it's not going to get any better.
So they're rude to the dead. They're quite rude to the grieving.
Yes.
As well. But yeah, the main thing that I had written down, I don't know if we cover this now or later if we're going to talk about, like, mental illness, but no one has any real feelings in this. Mm. There's no empathy. No one ever has a hug. You're much more likely to get shouted at than be offered any kind of help. All the people we see who are relatives of people who've died, none of them look like they're experiencing grief, including George's parents.
Well, yes, apart from her sister. That was the one thing that I found quite interesting and would have wanted to maybe follow up on in terms of that arc.
There's a little bit later on where George, because obviously Reggie, her sister, can't recognise her.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit where George goes and makes friends.
She was sitting in her closet at the end of the second episode, and I was like, how does she get in the house? Because she can see her.
But the show is, air quotes, weird. There's a bit at the end of episode one where the Reapers are sitting on top of an incredibly tall
cabin. Yes, how did they get there?
You're not supposed to think about that.
I'm sorry, I can't help it.
It's not even that they have magic powers. It's just, this is a funny, quirky, stylistic choice that we've made. Don't think about it.
That did have my favourite line in both the episodes where Mason was going on about something and then Betty looked at him and said, I'm sorry, I tuned you out. Were you whining?
Yeah, I've already used that in a conversation I had with somebody yesterday. It's joined...
Oh, that's mean.
It's joined our other listeners' favourite phrase, which was from Dickensian, which was... and then I wrapped him in a carpet and dropped him in the Thames.
Yes.
So...
Possibly shouldn't say that we use that a lot.
Yeah.
But
it's quirky, it's funny in inverted commas, but also... It's really emotionally dark because no one's allowed...
Yes.
It's not just that the Reapers don't have any real feelings. From the writer's point of view, none of the characters at all are allowed to have real feelings because her family doesn't really either.
I mean, yes and no. So, towards the end of the second episode, it is established that her 10-year-old sister has been struggling in some ways in that she's finding it difficult to use the bathroom... And she keeps stealing toilet seats from everywhere and is hanging them up in a tree behind their house because George was killed by a toilet seat falling out of the sky.
It is mentioned.
So the little girl is obviously grieving and struggling in a lot of ways. And mm-hmm. all the mum does, and you could argue that she is struggling too, and she is deep in her grief, and so she can't handle it in the right way, but all she does is shout at her and punish her for it.
Yep.
And I thought it was just so incredibly horrible, but then maybe that is part of the arc plot.
Maybe.
That they're all... And the dad just isn't engaging.
Yeah.
So you could argue that all of them are grieving really deeply and they're just handling it incredibly badly, which is understandable.
But her,
and perhaps part of the story is that they work it through and become a closer family eventually?
I don't remember. But there's a bit where George, again, can't be recognised by people, goes to a yard sale where a lot of her stuff is being sold off. And she gets her mum to talk about her daughter who has died, who is obviously her. And she says, I don't think I was a very good mum. And I don't think she is a very good mum because you never see her ever, like, hug anybody ever.
No.
My note is not just not a good mother, barely a functioning human being.
Yeah, and if she's establishing, if she's kind of having some kind of self-awareness that she wasn't a good mother to George, why is she then continuing to be a shitty mother to Reggie?
But, I mean, also just for George in general, there's a bit in the first episode where her mum says, I paraphrase, but she essentially said, whatever happened to you, you were at college, you had friends.
Yeah.
You know, you were...
You were happier.
You were happier, you had some kind of path, and then...
And just shouts at her about it. And then,
you know, she comes home and just lies in her bed with a duvet over her head all day, and that says mental illness.
Something has gone awry, yes, and shouldn't the parents be concerned and supportive?
But it's also worth pointing out that George says in the first episode that she's just ignored Reggie her entire life.
Yeah.
Which is just unbearably mean.
Yeah.
It's just really horrible.
They're all terrible.
They're all terrible people. Mason's not.
I mean...
Mason's really funny. I mean, he's a dreadful human being in many ways. Yes. But he's also very funny.
If you say so.
And quite cute. He is... yeah, he's amusing.
All terrible all the time, sorry.
Anything else you want to pick out before we go to diversity?
No. Didn't really have anything else to say, I'm afraid.
Okay. I've got some diversity stuff.
Yeah.
A tiny bit. So there's a bit where there's a voiceover from George while she's still alive at the family dining table where she's describing how, you know, she has basically ignored her sister all her life and that her father's having an affair.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten about that.
And then in...
At the funeral.
At the funeral, he has a very long hug with another guy.
Yes.
Yeah, that never goes anywhere. It was right. Brian Fuller wanted to write that into a relationship.
Because George says that he's having an affair with one of his graduate students.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a young woman who comes and hugs him in a slightly inappropriate way at the funeral. And then also a guy. And it's not established which one it is.
So Brian Fuller wanted it to be the guy. And one of the reasons why he left was they were named it.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
But there were lots of other reasons why he left. Mm-hmm. But that was part of it. But, yeah, I wrote a bunch of stuff under mental health, but we talked about it elsewhere, which is that it screams out to me that George has got some kind of serious depression, and that's why even before she died, and that's why it's all gone wrong. But you know,
is it ever explored why she dropped out of college, if there was something that happened to her?
Literally, the bits that I remember from the show were funny deaths.
Inverted commas.
I don't really remember. Uh-huh. Oh, well, to go all the way back up to the top again, where we say what's the show about, and I was saying it's just, you know, demonstration that life is capricious and random.
Mm.
It's also in some ways, you know, life is capricious and random, and you're going to die at a random time entirely by accident. You got to laugh, in inverted commas.
I guess.
So yeah. You know, it's just saying you've got to have that kind of attitude to it. So. Yeah.
There is a range of female characters, I would say, because Betty and Roxy and George are all very different.
Yep.
And then there's the mother and this little sister.
Mm-hmm.
Roxy is the token black character, and she's a fairly stereotypical angry black woman.
Mm-hmm.
The Reaper who took George's soul was also black, and he had like two lines, but that's it.
Yep. Yep.
So, not great.
Not great. But, you know, not terrible. For 2003, maybe.
Maybe?
Mm.
So, yeah. I don't think I really have anything else.
No, me neither. So, this about wraps it up for this month's chat.
And you said at the top, everybody loves a short show. And normally when you say that, it isn't. But, wow, it really is this time.
Okay. Time for the ratings. Make our listeners know, 5-star rating system with half stars. I dread to even ask. What's your number?
I mean, I know we say sometimes during the discussion the rating changes, and usually it's because we've had lots of interesting things to say and so we put it up, but I'm actually thinking about putting it down. I had 2 stars, but I'm actually going to think I'm going to put it down to 1.5.
Oh, harsh.
How about you?
It'll be really interesting.
I'm almost tempted to watch the rest of it to find out whether it actually gets any better and so that I can see if there's any development of anything, but I think it would irritate me.
There'll be episode synopses on Wikipedia, I'm
sure.
What was I going to say? It'd be really interesting at some point in time to look at what all the lowest scoring things are? Because I can't remember what.
The Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
Yes. What about me?
Yes, what about you?
I couldn't decide how I felt about it. I had very mixed feelings, so I've gone for very middle of the road, 2.5.
Okay, fair.
Did I still love it? No.
Did you?
No.
No. Well, that's sad.
Mm-hmm. I wrote down, likeable enough, but not motivated to watch anymore.
Okay. Yeah, damning with faint praise.
Yes, indeed.
So, next time. Apologies that this is, you know, a bit of a downer, listeners, but we are where we are. Next time, I'm going to go for something which I'm pretty sure is terrible, but I really want to watch it again, and I also want to make you watch it, and so I'm going to pick Domino.
Oh, really?
Yes. I need a bit of Keira Knightley wielding nunchucks with a bare midriff. I'm sorry.
It's fine. Keira Knightley, I mean, not that you should judge people on how they look, but Keira Knightley can look very nice and can be really interesting, like in the assassin thing we watched with Ben Whishaw. That was really good. I look at the poster for Domino and I'm like, that is not a... I know you like it, but it's not...
It's peak Keira for me.
It's really interesting because in terms of... You find that look very attractive. I find that look really unattractive.
I know. Well,
we will no doubt.
The world contains multitudes. Indeed, it does. Wouldn't it be boring if we all liked the same thing?
Right.
Yes, that's it for this month's episode of Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music. And thank you so much for listening. If you've made it to the end of this episode, we very much appreciate you. Why are you still here? But if you do like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
As ever, if you have any comments or you want to tell us about a time when you shared some media you love, and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can always email us at willyoustillloveit@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear from you.
You can also follow us on Blue Sky at still-love-it.bsky.social.
And please join us next month to find out what Dave thinks of Domino.
And whether or not Annie still loves it after our discussion.
Bye for now.